Thank you, everyone, for coming today. This is part two. I got halfway through my notes last week, so we hope to get through. Is the mic on? Pastor's wondering. Test, test, test. Is it going there? Sounds. So, see if I'm on. Am I on? Okay, yep. It's set up front, so we can't hear. Okay. So we'll start over. Here we are, part two of the seven churches of the book of Revelation. One of the reasons this started is in February and March, Pastor Don went through Revelation 2 and 3, basically, which teaches on the seven churches in the book of Revelation that Christ revealed to the Apostle John what to write about these seven churches. And then Maureen and I, my wife and I, had the opportunity to go to these seven churches in April. So Pastor Don said, take a bunch of notes, which I didn't do because it was so overwhelming. But I took lots of pictures, and I've read a couple books before and after as well, as our tour guide was excellent. So for those who weren't here last week, I'll do a very quick review. And we spent most of our time in Ephesus, which is right here. So the map on the left is a modern map of the world, of that area. And this blow up is used with permission for teaching purposes. And it shows the seven churches at the time of Christ and of the time of Paul. So this is modern day Turkey. Izmir is Smyrna. Izmir is the modern Smyrna in the same region, same area. And so these letters are written in a circular fashion in the book of Revelation, as far as the progression of the writing goes. So the last one today will be Laodicea. We talked about Ephesus and Smyrna, and now we're on to Pergamum. I'll flip through the slides for Ephesus because they're quite stunning, some of the stuff that's there today. So for orientation, here is Israel down here. Paul's missionary journeys and such all went out this way. John was exiled on the island of Patmos here under Emperor Domitian. And Emperor Domitian reigned from 81 AD to 96 AD. Tradition says once he died, John was allowed to go back to where he went, was Ephesus. So with that brief background, we'll just flip through what we saw last week. We're not going to read all the stuff we read last week. That is just some of the Revelation things. Oh, and now I'm having a little... There we go. So I started just with the island of Patmos. This is more or less looking northeast. And Patmos is in Greece right now. It's all part of the Roman Empire, of course, at one time. And all these islands are ones that, especially in the distance, were ones that the, like Paul sailed past. Samos is out there. You can, if you, I believe it's the one very far out this way. So he was all in that area. This is more or less a little higher up than the cave that John wrote the book in. This is a picture of the cave. Of course, it's all built up now and, but anyway, I just wanted to show that for orientation. Then we went on to Ephesus. I used Pastor Don's outline as to the wording of what he said for each of the churches. So he said this is the self-satisfied church. So I do highly recommend anyone that wasn't here on Wednesday nights or might be interested. I'm not going to deal with theology today, so I do recommend you look at Pastor Don's teaching on this. It's online. We have our own Grace Baptist Church of Victoria YouTube channel. They're all broken up on there, well worth looking at. So this is, I'm just going to fly over this. This is one of the main streets in Ephesus. It's amazing. This is the Celsus Library. Now, this is built in 110 AD, so John wasn't there at the time. On the right, those two arches lead to the marketplace, the Agora. You can see in the background, this is the library, so we're on the other far side of the Agora. And you just walk about 50 yards or less, 20 yards, and turn around. And you've got this is the amphitheater, and then the road out to the harbor at one time. Now the harbor's quite far away, but there we go. And this was the temple one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and it was the Temple of Artemis, which is called Diana. The Romans called Artemis Diana. And this is, of course, the silversmith's big money, if you recall, in the book of Acts, where they had a lot of money involved. So they dragged some of Paul's people to the amphitheater and, sort of caused a big stir in the city of Ephesus. One thing I'll correct, I said last week, I said this was the church that was built where the Apostle John was buried. Tradition says the Apostle John. Well, that's true, but I said it was, the old one was from the first century. It was actually in the 300s, and the tomb was from the first century, well, second century, 100 or so A.D. So I'll just correct myself on that. The current one's from 548 A.D. This is the Temple of Artemis. This is a model. This is what Artemis looked like in some renditions. The Romans also, or some others also, she was also known as the Huntress. She had multiple titles, but so she was, sometimes you'll just see her as a normal woman with a bow and arrow. So it was sort of like you can pick and choose. She was the goddess of the hunt, goddess of childbirth, that sort of thing. This is in the 500s, John's church there, 548 A.D. This was a baptismal tank from the 500s for immersion. And I did some further research, and we don't know. You see those two holding tanks on the back and front here. We don't know exactly what those are for. Pastor's wife, Debbie, suggested, being an organizer, church organizer that she is, maybe they were for towels. You know? But they don't. But Christy was right that it is in the form of a cross. I did a little more research on Mark Wilson's book called Biblical Turkey. But we don't know what those were for, 1,500 years later. Then we looked at Smyrna. Smyrna means, the translation is myrrh. Pastor Don's title for his session was Do Not Fear. This is part of the amphitheater. It was three stories and part of the area. It still has running water. It's a lot of water and clean water. And a lot of graffiti. One of the graffitis there, you may recall, is written on the wall. I'm in love with a woman whose number is 731. So this is like a code, just like the Antichrist is 666. Okay, and this is up on the main level of the agora. All of these cities had in the background, you'll see some of the pictures, had the top sort of fortress area, Acropolis. Thyatira was one of the ones that didn't, but almost every other one did. Okay, so now we're on to our new presentation. So we're on to Pergamum. And so I'll just read what Revelation 2:12 through 17 says. This is Christ dictating to John, the book of Revelation, and to the angel of the church of Pergamum, write, the one who has a sharp two-edged sword says this, I know that where you dwell, where Satan's throne is, and you hold firmly to my name and do not deny my faith, even in the days of Antipas, my witness, my faithful ones who are killed among you, where Satan dwells. But I have a few things against you, because you have some there who hold to the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality. So you too have some who in the same way hold to the teaching of the Nicolaitans. Therefore repent, or else I'm coming to you quickly, and I will wage war against them with the sword of my mouth. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who overcomes, I'll give some of the hidden manna, and I'll give them a white stone, and the name written on the stone, which no one knows except the one who receives it. So, as I mentioned, you can refer to Pastor Don's teaching on Wednesday nights. I won't get into a few of these things, like there's some theology in there. Who are the Nicolaitans? Well, they're false teachers. Pastor Don explains a little bit more. But what we have on here, here's a model of, at the base of, this is Pergamum. This is the Acropolis at Pergamum. Each one of those buildings is ruins now, of course, but they are temples of various kinds. Pergamum is about 113 kilometers north of Smyrna, not far from the Aegean coast. Pliny the Elder called this city the most illustrious city of Asia Minor. It's very high up Acropolis, which is this, and the modern city you can see below it. We'll show you that. So we'll look at some of the temples that were up there. So as you go up, you come across this ruins here. This is Demeter, the Greek god of the harvest. There's a whole temple for worship there. In the base there, in the background, you can see that's the modern city of Pergamum. And sort of to the far right up this way, and this route actually goes out to the coast. When we say the coast, we say it's the Aegean Sea. And these will just sort of flip through because they're more visual than information, although I'll give a bit. This part below here, you can see some sort of stones piled up and such. This is the temple of Zeus, which is the Greek god of the sky and the weather. The Romans called Zeus by their gods' names of Jupiter. This is also, if you look on the internet, there was a lot of archaeology work done here in the mid-1800s by Germany. They had an agreement with the Turks, or the Ottomans, I mean, and they did all this excavation at that time, and they took a great amount of things back to Berlin, and they have actually a Pergamum Museum of Archaeology in Berlin, including at this site there was a great altar, and it's rebuilt in the Pergamum Museum. If you ever Google that, it's very, very interesting. A lot of these sites where archaeology digs were done by different countries, and Turkey currently is trying to get some of the stonework back so that they can have it and rebuild it here on the site or in a museum. We were told that at this site, interestingly, somewhere over here was an altar where they had continuous burning of sacrifices to Zeus, and that if you are coming from the harbor miles and miles away, you'll see this continuous smoke coming up. And so as you're approaching Pergamum, you will see this from all the time, the smoke continuously rising. And so I find it quite interesting that in the quote that we read here, that this is where Satan dwells there in verse 13, because there's just a ton of altars and false gods and false worship and the continuous smoke coming up. This is also a theater in the side of the hill there, on the side of the Acropolis. And at the base of that, they are starting to rebuild the temple of Dionysus, which is the goddess of winemaking. So all over this place, there's temples. You can just see. This is the temple to Hadrian, or pardon me, to Trajan. It was finished by Hadrian. Hadrian ruled around 135, so Trajan was before him. And so sometimes it's called the Temple of Hadrian as well, but it is Trajan's temple. And in front of him, in front of that, is there was a library there. This library was the second only to importance to Alexandria in Egypt, and Plutarch claimed it had 200,000 volumes. While Pergamum was once an independent city-state, over the century, many empires have controlled it, including the Greeks and the Romans. There's some independent city-states, and there's a lot of wars and attempts to overtake. And if you took the high Acropolis, that's when you controlled the city. They didn't seem to worry about the village below, or maybe they took that, but they didn't really take the city until they overtook the Acropolis. And that's why many of these places had very high fortresses at the top. Pergamum is apparently the name derived from the word parchment. So it was known for its parchment. Probably Pastor Don knows that. And across the valley, still part of Pergamum, it was well known for a hospital and a healing medical school. Asclepius was the Greek god of medicine. And they had its own amphitheater there. There were pools to bathe in, hot baths. And the definition of Asclepius is to cut open, interestingly. So anyway, Pergamum was quite amazing. So Maureen said she thought it was her favorite ruins, but she had been to Ephesus before I hadn't. I have to say I was quite impressed with Ephesus. Now we'll move on to the fourth city written in the book of Revelation. And so we'll read this part, and it's Thyatira. And to the angel of the church of Thyatira write, the Son of God, who has eyes like a flame of fire and feet with burnished bronze, say this, I know your deeds and your love and faith and service and perseverance, and that your deeds of late are greater than at first. But I also have this against you, that you tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and she teaches and leads my bondservants astray, so that they commit sexual immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols. I gave her time to repent, and she does not want to repent for her sexual immorality. Behold, I will throw her in a bed of sickness, and those who commit adultery with her into great tribulation, unless they repent of her deeds. And I will kill her children with a plague, and all the churches will know that I am he who searches the hearts and the minds and the hearts, and I will give to each one of you according to his deeds. But I say to you, the rest who are at Thyatira, who do not hold this teaching, who have not known the deep things of Satan, as they call them, I place no other burden on you. Nevertheless, what you have, hold firmly until I come. The one who overcomes and the one who keeps my deeds until the end, I will give him authority over nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of the potter are shattered, as I also have received authority over my father. And I will give them the morning star. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. This is the one that Pastor Don entitled, I don't like your friends, or I really don't like your friends. Yes, that's right. Yes, Pergamum was, I don't like your friends. Thyatira is, I really don't like your friends. So it's very interesting because Thyatira is built, basically, the modern city is built right on top of it. So you really only, other than a few walls apparently around the city, you only have a square block, and not even a large one of that, of the ruins. And so we were walking in here, and I should mention we went with Dr. Randall Price and his group. There were about 35 of us with him and his family, and he's an archaeologist. And he was walking along, and he was picking up pottery from 2,000 years ago. And so there you can see from here also in this same square block, here's some ancient walls. Well, they're various ages. The base would be quite old, and you can see the different layers on it. And so these are built over the centuries as different. That's a crumble, a dilapidate. There's a lot of earthquakes in this region, by the way, and it's really taken its toll on, at one time, on some of these cities, so they'd have to rebuild these walls in the cities. Thyatira was the smallest of the seven cities mentioned in Revelation, yet it was an important military city throughout the centuries, as it was located at a junction of three roads that led to Pergamum, Sardis, and Smyrna. During Roman times, trade went through the city, and Thyatira was known for its dyes, wool work. And this was the city that Lydia came from. You'll recall that Paul met up with Lydia later in Philippi. So there were a lot of, I mentioned last week, a lot of these cities had trade guilds, and these trade guilds had their own god or goddess that they would tend to put as the head of the trade guild. And so it became very difficult for Christians to even work because they'd have big banquets in the trade guild and they'd sacrifice meat to idols. And now you see, as a new Christian, you had to figure it out as you went along. What should I do? What shouldn't I do? So there were often feasts to these gods throughout the. Oh, I put this in because this is sort of like just in that block, there's a lot of just stuff lying around. But on this left side, this tall stone in front here, this is what they call, you can sort of see there chiseled out, what they call blotting out of a name. And apparently that was, let me just see here. Apparently, that name that was apparently there, they can tell by the context of the writing, was the Emperor Domitian. And they blotted it out, they cut it out. And that really was all to see at Thyatira. I mean, of course, there's lots of history and stuff. The military encampments were quite vast there because they needed it for protection, and it didn't have one of those high acropolises, so they made the Romans and such made their own. And it was really quite damaged by an earthquake in the whole region in 17 AD, and Tiberius gave a lot of money for the rebuilding of the city. Okay, the next one is Sardis, or Sardi, Romans 3, 1 through 16, and this is what Pastor Don called dead church walking. So the angel of church of Sardis, right, he who has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars says this, I know your deeds and that you have a name, that you are alive and yet you are dead. Be constantly alert and strengthen the things that remain, which are about to die, for I have not found your deeds completed in the sight of my God. So remember what you have received and heard and keep it and repent. Then if you are not alert, I will come like a thief and you will not know what hour I will come to you. But you have a few people in Sardis who have not soiled their garments, and they walk with me in white, for they are worthy. The one who overcomes will be clothed the same way in the white garments, and I will not erase or blot out, like we saw, his name from the book of life. And I will confess his name before my Father and before the angels. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So this is Sardis. Now I'll refer you back to Pastor John's teaching, of course. Obviously, I highly recommend going through that if you even review it on the internet, because he talks about the idea of blotting out and that sort of thing, and what is meant by that. Now, Sardis is very interesting. It's about 56 kilometers southeast of Thyatira. It's about 100 kilometers inland from the Aegean coast. This city was at the crossroad of four highways, which brought a lot of trade to the city. And it was quite a rich city because they taxed all the goods coming through. One of the highways is called the Royal Road, and it was built in about 500 BC by King Darius, and of the Persian Empire, you'll recall. It stretches about 2,400 kilometers from here east. Well, that's west and our east. And it was actually the basis for the model for the United States Pony Express. So, and I also know from reading other history that the Mongols had a series, a very long road as well, and they'd have outposts along the way where they'd trade horses so that they could get a message 1,000 miles away in a very short time. A guy would ride like crazy, switch the horse, ride again. And so apparently it was the same idea here. They probably got the idea from Sardis and the Persian Empire. Again, this city changed possession, of course, many times over the centuries and millennia. So what they have here is from 200s AD, this was a very large Jewish synagogue. In most of these cities, there's quite a fair Jewish population. They weren't persecuted as much at that time as the Christians were. And I was thinking of Pastor Don's teaching in Hebrews and how much the Jews that became Christians, in one way, it'd be easier for them to go back to Judaism because the Romans, in some eras, didn't bother them as much. They had certain passage. They didn't have to order. They didn't have to do that pinch of spice to the emperor for some reason. Pastor Don would know, I'm sure. They were allowed to be their own entity. But Christianity was illegal, is what was going on. So this large Jewish synagogue was built in about the 200s AD. The city itself, there's not, like a lot of these cities are at various stages of repair and rebuilding and ruins, so there's a lot more to be unearthed. And this lady in the center was our tour guide for Turkey, and some of the stuff, not here, but I'll show you one of the things in one of the cities, she hadn't seen before, but she had just been there 2 years ago, and they had just rebuilt this part of the ruins. They also had an elaborate gymnasium. This is the entrance to part of it, or inside part of it, I guess. And there's all kinds of inscriptions on the walls and such. That is Dr. Randall Price there teaching us about the history and what was going on in the city at the time of Christ. This gymnasium also had a Roman bathhouse from about the 100s and 200s AD. And this is the, you'd be curious to hear, I keep referring to Pastor Don's teaching because this is why I'm doing this today. It's a follow-up to his teaching. He asked me to do this. And this is the Acropolis that Pastor Don taught on. And this was the one that they were so confident in their defenses that they felt no army would ever take the city because of the great protection of this fortress. They were overly confident, and you know that's part of the reason that they had this confidence in themselves, even as you know Christians or. So the Persians laid a siege to this city in about 549 BC, and you'll recall Pastor Don's teaching that eventually it was captured when a guard had dropped his helmet over one of these edges, and somebody from below, one of the armies below, somebody watched him, how he climbed down, picked up his helmet, and climbed back up, because they couldn't figure out a way to get in. And that's how the city ended up being defeated. So they had a false confidence in their security and in their riches. This is where the term rich as Croesus, close enough, Croesus was coined for the king of Sardis. He was a very rich fella, a very rich man, and also they had this false security in their riches. So a couple of centuries later, in 334 BC, Alexander the Great captured the city from the Persians. So you have this. You could sort of see this biblical history too. We don't see it in Canada, but you recall in the book of Daniel how you have Babylon and then the Medes and the Persians and then the Greeks and then the Romans. Well, you could see all this in this history, who took over when and all that. So that was Alexander the Great in 334, but later the city was again taken, and this time by Antiochus III in 214 BC. At the time of the apostles, the city had a population of between 60 and 100,000 people. So this in front, you can see those two pillars there. This was actually the temple of Artemis, another temple of Artemis, Diana. Before the time of the Greeks, it was a temple to something else, one of their other gods. So there's always sort of this morphing and changing of what a god is. Oh, Cybele, Temple of Cybele or Cybele or something. And then it was changed to Artemis in Greek times. So these pillars are massive. You can see the people at the bottom there, like those two tall ones. And these two, despite all the earthquakes and everything, never did topple over. So those two are not rebuilt. They're the way they originally were. There's a lot of ruins around there, but it was quite a massive site, as you can see. Now we'll go on to Philadelphia. This is number 6. Pastor Don called it the Church of the Open Door. And to the angel of the Church of Philadelphia write, he who is holy, he who is true, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one opens, says this, I know your deeds. Behold, I have put before you an open door which no one can shut, because you have a little power and have followed my word and have not denied my name. Behold, I'll make those of the synagogue of Satan who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie, I'll make them come and bow down before your feet, and make them know what I have, and make them know that I have loved you, because you have kept my word of perseverance. I also will keep you from the hour of testing, that hour which will come upon the whole world to test those who live on the earth. I am coming quickly. Hold firmly to what you have, so that no one will take your crown. The one who overcomes, I will make him a pillar of the temple of my God, and he will go out, not go out from it anymore. I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God and my new name. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. So this is Philadelphia. This is one of those cities that there's hardly anything to see. So these are massive pillars. There were six massive pillars. Only three are standing now, of a church from the about the 500s AD. But again, it's just a city block. There's not a lot to see here because excavation takes money. It takes, in some cases, like Philadelphia as well as Thyatira, the city's built on top of the ruins. Others, like Colossae, they haven't even been touched yet. There's so much that needs to be done. And you have to get permission from the Turkish government. And there's only so many people that are, you know, able to do it. So Philadelphia is about 48 kilometers southeast of Sardis. Sir William Ramsay says Philadelphia's prosperity depended on the great road from the harbor to Smyrna to Phrygia and east. So again, it's a lot of travel. This was the Church of St. John from the 500s. It was founded in the early 100s BC, and this was also one in 17 AD that was devastated by an earthquake, and financial relief came for the Emperor Tiberius. So he helped several cities in the area. And so, you know, to a degree, they were expected to honor him with statues and things as well in order to acknowledge his help. The area is quite interesting. It's known for its grape production, and it's very easy, apparently, to grow grapevines and things in the volcanic soil that's around there. They had a very large Jewish community. But the synagogue, just like all the rest, except for that one from 200, hasn't been found. The synagogue hasn't been found yet. But again, the city's all built on top of it. So there's also a long Christian history in the city. And 11 of the Christians were martyred when Polycarp was martyred in Smyrna in about 156 AD. Now, the next two slides are not one of the seven churches. It is Hierapolis. It's a major city in the region, but I've just put it in here, these two in here for context. First off, this is a pool of calcium carbonate. And so Hierapolis is known for its hot springs. And you can see these white cliff of calcium carbonate miles away. This is a big valley, and it's quite spectacular. Now, the main reason I put this slide in is so this would be looking more or less southwest, sort of a southerly direction, and our tour guide pointed out that at the base of this mountain that you see the snow on, which is the only place you ever see snow in Turkey, it just doesn't snow, is the ruins of Colossae. And she said there's no sense going there because it hasn't even been touched for excavation. And so it is about 16 kilometers away from Colossae. North of Colossae, about 10 kilometers, is Laodicea. And we'll just turn here. Now, I included a slide of Maureen and I just to prove we were there. And this is the theater at Hierapolis. Beautiful, the rebuilding of the of the wall and the pillars behind it. It's amazing. It's a nice, beautiful. And anyway, just directly across in about here is Laodicea. And that apparently is about 16 kilometers as well. So I show those for context of it's sort of a tri-city area. And I have to say, Turkey, like a valley like this, it's very beautiful. It's really quite, I didn't know what to expect. I'd never been there before. And it's very, there's a river that runs through there, which is a branch of the Meander River, which is where we get our word meander from, our English word. And, it was very interesting. So this is interesting also because Colossae was known in that region, was known for its cold water availability, I guess coming down from the snow in the mountains, I guess. And these, as you saw in those thermal pools, was known for its hot water. And when we come to Laodicea, you'll recall and we'll read where Christ says, "You're neither warm nor hot, and I'll spit you out of my mouth." And they believe that it's because of this contrast in water, and also Laodicea across the valley here, piped in. It's one possibility is it's water. They know this water was brought in by an aqueduct about 10 kilometers to the south, and probably by the time the water there got lukewarm. So it was no wonder Christ spit it out, or saying, so we'll go on to Laodicea. I'm just chuckling here because Pastor Don's title for this one is "You Make Me Sick." So anyway, so here's we're on to our last church. So we will get through this all today. I know I'm going a little fast, but there's so much that could be said. I'm just trying to give you an overview, give you something you can relate to what Pastor Don was teaching, and give you an idea of what's going on. Now, Laodicea was very fascinating, and this is what Christ told John to write. "To the angel of the church Laodicea write, the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the origin of the creation of God, says this: I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say I'm rich and have become wealthy and have no need of anything, and you do not know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, naked, I advise you to buy from me gold refined by fire, so that you may become rich, and white garments, so that you may clothe yourself, and the shame of your nakedness will not be revealed. And eye salve to apply to your eyes, so that you may see. Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. Therefore, be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me. The one who overcomes, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat with my Father in his throne. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches." Now, Laodicea, as I mentioned, is the last of our seven churches. This is one of the main roads. It's the only city, at least of the seven, that were built on a grid system. I'm not sure it was oriented north, south, east, west, but it was a grid nonetheless. This city itself dates from about 2000 BC. However, it was named Laodicea when Antiochus II rebuilt the town in the mid 200s BC and renamed it for his wife, Laodice. As you can infer from the reading of the scripture there, it was quite a wealthy city. And part of the reason it was located on a caravan route from the Far East. And it was also known for its black wool, which a certain type of sheep had made famous, and which apparently can't be found today, at least in that area. I think that was Mark Wilson that said that in his book. And was also had a famous school of medicine there as well. Josephus, who wrote in the first century AD, reports there was a large Jewish population in Laodicea. Laodicea's archaeology work is amazing. And as I said, some of the structures have only been rebuilt, unearthed, and reassembled in the last decade or so. This on that one of that main road, you turn right in the middle of being rebuilt. This is one of the temples to Zeus. A lot of this stuff, the statues and things, by the way, I don't know about the pillars on the main road, but a lot of the statues, they were all painted. It was all very colorful. So we see it now, and it just looks like marble. But a lot of it had quite a colorful colors to it, like even the idols and stuff. Now, this is quite interesting because this is a part of a villa that was unearthed that is dated from about the first century AD. And you'll recall during the persecution of the Romans, at times there were house churches, people meeting in houses. And so this villa, they know that this was a house church. At some point around the early 100s, this room was converted into a meeting, and they can tell because of that front structure of it there. So before any church was built there, they would meet in this house church, or ones like it. And this was quite a wealthy owner, because also this was his view out his front yard. There was a big amphitheater there. Again, there's various stages of unearthing. And across the valley, there's the calcium carbonate cliffs of Hierapolis. Just fascinating. Very beautiful, too. It was such nice weather. So, as mentioned, Hierapolis was known for its hot water springs across the valley. And the cold water came from the Colossi area. And I told you the theory on that. This was actually a large church. Now, you can see it's covered, but that's for protection as they're unearthing various parts of it. But this was a large church that was discovered in 2010, and it's from the 300s AD. Constantine legalized Christianity, as you probably know, in the early 300s. And then in that era, you start seeing churches in some of these cities built up, just like in Ephesus, that early one. And this is the front of the church we're looking at there. But interestingly, also from the 300s, there's a immersion baptismal tank. And there's steps that you go into it, and it is in the form of a cross, which I probably wouldn't have thought of unless Christy said something last week. It's got what? Yeah, there's sort of towel holders at each end. That's interesting. What? Yeah, anyway. And this would have all been enclosed, of course, but they're in the process of rebuilding it. And that's actually the valley in the far view, so you're sort of looking east. it's quite amazing. Like, so from the 300s, they can see this. And an immersion tank, for us Baptists, we don't believe in sprinkling. So there's evidence of very early forms of immersion. There's a plug for the Baptist on. Yeah. just a few more slides, but it's just amazing what's being unearthed here. This is the agora, huge. There were walkways on either side of it. Again, a very beautiful area. Now you notice here, this canvas hang over top. This whole area was covered in a mound of dirt. And so when they started excavating it, I don't know, not very many years ago, they found this original wall, and that was the painting on it. So like I say, we often think of it as being just old marble or bland color, but it was a vibrant, the wall of this agora or marketplace was all painted very brightly and in the colors that they used. I'll just point out on this one, like there are poppies down in front. There are poppies growing wild all over the place. And those walkways on either side, those pillars, were covered walkways for the agora. Like it's amazing to me, like how advanced some of these people are, but yet they're worshiping these idols and building these temples. And like these weren't stupid people. This is, you know, and the mathematics, the calculations that needed to build some of these things, they understood it all. But I guess man in his heart feels that they have to worship something, even if it's an emperor. just a couple more slides. This is another amphitheater. So in some cities there were more than one amphitheater. It seats about 16,000. It's one of the few places we actually saw them working while they were rebuilding it. And we're pressed on time, but we just have another picture or two. And this was the latest thing that the tour guide said. She had not seen this assembled before, and she was just there a couple of years ago. This is on a separate long street, not that one that we saw in the beginning. And it's a fountain to honor of Trajan. So that's marble image thing of them there. And down in front would have been all water. They didn't have water in it now. But so there, again, on these streets, there were temples and marketplaces and sales and Lee.
So you said they were rebuilding. Like, are they actually fixing existing structures? Like, I can see on the pillars, it almost looks like they're.
So good question. Yes, they're actually rebuilding. They're putting rock on top of rock. They're, you know, they have to find all the right pieces before they do anything and catalog it, so that it's not just random. So,
So I understand there's going to be a secular desire to honor some of this stuff, but are they finding like more biblical evidence? Like, obviously they're seeing churches and these
are they unearthing anything to do with Christianity? Well, not that I'm aware of, other than, as you say, the churches and the earlier synagogues. There would be evidence for that house church, for example, those sorts of things. Of course, a lot of any parchments or something wouldn't. Although it's quite an arid area, unless you found them in clay pots, like the Dead Sea, you know. So not that I'm aware of. Now, there are museums for various, it's like Ephesus, there's an Ephesus Archaeology Museum, pardon me, that we went through, but limited time, we couldn't really examine everything. I mean, there's coins are found, there's pottery found, and you can match certain things up to emperors and things like that, but... Oh, Gordon.
How old are the baptismal?
300s AD, at the time of Constantine. So Constantine.
I find it interesting because the Jehovah's Witnesses say it's a stake, not a cross. And that puts very Christianity.
Now, isn't that an interesting idea? That's a very interesting idea. Gordon has friends that he talks to witness to, who are Jehovah's Witnesses, and of course they say that Christ wasn't crucified on a cross, he was crucified on a stake, an individual stake, and that baptismal tank is more than one, or in the form of a cross in the 300s. I don't know what they would say about that. Of course, when they wrote their literature, they had no idea. That's their problem, is that they make these things up and then it's disproven, but then they don't get Christy.
Well, I kind of embarrassed myself last week because I felt like I was muttering incoherently, but the imagery was so rich to me that it's like a cross, which symbolizes the gospel. It's hewn out of stone, which symbolizes Christ. The people groups, the Jews and the Greeks. To the Jews, he's a stone of stumbling, and to the Greeks, he's a rock of offense, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
just how they go down and they're buried, like literally go down into the earth and rise again, like the imagery of the baptism. So that's
what I was trying. Well, that's even better, because I thought what you said last week was great, but I can't be as eloquent as you to rephrase what you just said. So, but basically the baptismal tank to go down, and how it's an offense to the Greeks, and I can't even repeat what you said. It was so good. So thank you very much.
These seven churches.
Yeah.
Are they still called the same name, or their name have changed?
Very interesting. The seven churches, are the names the same? Well, of course, they'd be the cities where the churches were. It depends. Thyatira, for example, was built on top of the old one, the old city, and so it's called by a different name. So they know it's the old Thyatira from excavation and evidence and location and that. Something like Laodicea, it's more or less an abandoned site. They didn't build right on top of it again, so it just retains its old name. It wouldn't have been renamed. So good question. It depends where it was. And Pergamum, yeah, that's a very good point, because Pergamum is called by a different name at the same location, modern name in the same location. Yeah, yeah.
Secondly?
Yeah.
All those temples, do they still worship either, knowing fully where that it has become a Muslim country? Do they still worship those idols?
No. So the question is, do they still worship those idols in those temples or the same idols that are in the temples. No, they don't. Not in any way that I know. And mostly Turkey is a Muslim country, as you say, so it would be frowned upon to do that. But I think that sort of went out of vogue as Christianity came along and the Muslims came along and all these different people groups of those faiths moved into the areas, and it was just no longer existed. Good questions, though. We'll just finish up here. We're running a little late, but let's see. I guess that's it, actually. I'll just show the last slide of those locations again. And so anyway, I hope this presentation in the last couple of weeks has been informative to you. I know the trip was amazingly informative. And a lot of these cities, so Debbie has a question, or where the apostles walked, certainly was very familiar with the Christianity of the day, trying to spread the gospel in those areas. Debbie, you're going to ask something?
Yeah, her mention of it being a Muslim country reminded me that I think you guys were somewhere when they had the call to worship.
Actually, that's a great point. There, several times on our trip, but I know what you're talking about, we'd be walking along in like Istanbul or somewhere, and we'd hear the call to worship for the Muslim prayer. And where we were that you may be thinking of is actually, Maureen made a very good point. We were in Ephesus, and we were at the ruins of the Temple of Artemis, and we're thinking of the false worship of Artemis. And all of a sudden we could hear, because there's a city right close by, it's not called Ephesus anymore, but it's right there, and we heard the Muslim call to prayer. And we just sort of thought, you know, in certain ways, nothing's changed. People are still worshiping false gods, and it's infused in the culture. And I will mention, too, like in Thyatira with the trade guilds and stuff, the worship of idols and of false gods was infused in their culture. Like if you're not a Christian, well, it doesn't matter. You just, do whatever you do. But there, if you're not part of the group, like, it was difficult for you to even work and stuff. Like, you had to, so it made it very difficult on the Christians to, and then, of course, the Roman emperors and certain ones of them and the persecution. And I hope that was good, because I did enjoy putting this together for you. And it was a very good trip. Highly recommended if you're interested in that sort of thing. And we better break for lunch. We're running late. Thank you very much.